Good morning. The time is now 9:04 a.m. and you're tuned to the coffee table. I'm Kathleen Gustafson, and Homer Electric Association is the topic this morning. There are plenty of panelists for you to speak with. There is Aaron McKittrick and Jim Levine, HEA board members, to take questions. Also, Carrie Ann Baker, HEA spokesperson. And a little later in the hour, you're going to meet Louis Flora, candidate for District 3 for HEA board. But first, let's see who's on the tie line. Carrie Ann Baker, spokesperson for HEA. Do you read me?
Yes, I do, Kathleen. Thank you.
Good morning. And Jim Levine, HEA board member, are you there?
Yes. Hi, Kathleen.
Okay, great. I've got you both. I'm also, let's test Aaron McKittrick's mic. Aaron?
Hello.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sounds good. And Louis Flora, are you there?
Yes, good morning.
Okay, I'll be back for you. I'm taking your mic down for now. Carrie Ann Baker, you are brand new at Homer Electric Association. So can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
Sure. Today is my 14th day on the job. So I really am brand new. I'm proud to be here and proud to work with the likes of Jim and Aaron and Brad Janorski at HEA. We have a great team, and I'm just proud to join it. So a little bit about myself. I'm an attorney by trade. I usually specialize in environmental, land use, regulatory kind of work. And I had worked for about a decade in South Florida. And my husband decided he wanted to be a boat builder, kind of, you know, into our 10th year of marriage or so. And good supportive, I thought to myself, well, you better find yourself fast because you're a married father of three. But he went to work for Bayweld in Homer, and that's how we ended up in Homer.
Good gig.
And it's not too bad, a good family, and we really learned a lot from them. But for us, the moment we drove over that hill in Homer, it was home. And a lot, I know a lot of people talk about that. Certainly the key. Yes, we love the community. We love the people. I'm very, very happy with the school district. So I was doing some work there, and I went to work for a law firm up in Anchorage for a couple of years. And then HEA gave me a call, you know, a couple months ago. We started talking about it, and our family just jumped at the opportunity to come back to Homer. So that's kind of a little bit about myself and how I ended up in Homer.
Well, thanks for that. I do want to get right into HEA annual meeting, which is coming up on May 6th. I know that last year, you know, in the past, I remember just great big parties for HEA's annual meeting. And I know that last year it had to go virtual. It's staying virtual again this year. Isn't that correct?
That is correct. And it is our hope that this year will be our last virtual meeting. So let's talk a little bit about what to do if you want to participate. And we certainly hope we will get a lot of our members to participate because we enjoy interacting and we learn a lot. May 6th at 6 p.m. is when it starts. Now, in order to participate, you do need to register early. Registration for the meeting will kick off on Monday, and you will be able to go to our website. It's not up yet, and it's not live, but we will have it live by Monday. You'll be able to click on a link and register to participate in the meeting. Now, some people just want to listen, just want to hear what's going on, but they don't necessarily want to make motions from the floor or do that kind of thing. We want to provide an opportunity for those people to listen and get the information as well. So there'll be an option for you just to stream on YouTube the meeting. You don't have to actually register and participate if you don't want to, although we certainly hope you will. And in fact, we're going to give a lot of prizes to those who will participate and register for the meeting. So we'll have a $50 prize, a $100 prize, $150, $200, $250, and 1 year free electricity with the limits of 10,000 kilowatts. So, participation is important. We want to hear from you, and we would encourage you to start registering as early as Monday for that meeting.
Carrie Ann, you were phasing in and out just a little bit, so I want to repeat that a person who participates in this meeting can win, did you say, 1 year's worth of electric bills covered from HEA?
That's correct. Not to exceed 10,000 kilowatts. We also have some cash prizes ranging from $50 to up to $500.
Okay, terrific. Thanks so much. Now, we also want to talk about ballots, because ballots went out last week, and they're due back on the 5th. But most people turn in their ballots around this time, you know, within a week or two of getting it. Do you have that right?
You do, and you can turn it in only through the mail. Now, one question we get a lot is, what do I do if I mark it wrong? What do I do if I lose it? And we do provide an opportunity for you to get a substitute ballot. Come by either one of our local offices, bring your ID, and we do have a process for giving you a new ballot. But it's important to remember, we won't accept your ballots there. Election integrity is important to us, so we only do a mail-in ballot where we have a third-party administrator that can look at those and tally those up for us.
And also, I just want to give people a little bit of perspective. First of all, if you have any questions for Carrie Ann Baker, or we can also bring Aaron McKittrick and Jim Levine into the conversation. Any questions regarding your membership in HEA or about HEA, call 235-7721, or you can email kathleen@kbbi.org, and we'll ask your questions of the panelists. So a couple of things to let people know. HEA members today, over 24,000, started in 1945 with 9 members forming a co-op. There were 56 members in 1950. Today, over 24,000. And so I wondered what kind of rate is HEA growing, or is it growing?
Well, currently we have 24,613 members. We have over 31,726 meters, or precisely that amount of meters. We do expect a lot of growth. I mean, if you look around the peninsula, you'll see that builders are dividing up lots, and we're expecting a lot of growth on the peninsula and a lot of new connections.
Terrific.
Yeah, we've already had, this is Jim. 32 members have requested service for this the year, which is over twice as much as, or almost twice as much as last year.
So twice as many people joined the cooperative this year as last year? Is that what I'm
Well,
hearing?
they're requesting new services.
Gotcha. Okay, thanks. Yeah, that's Jim Levine. Also, Aaron McKittrick, board member, is here in the studio. And so I would like to turn my attention to the two of you and talk about, we've talked about the annual meeting that's coming up on May 6th, and we'll remind people about that again. But I'd like to talk about the April meeting. It happened yesterday. And I'll start with Aaron McKittrick. What are some of the issues that, well, like the projects HEA is working on yesterday? What's happening right now with HEA?
Well, there's always two things, right? There's always every day, there's a whole lot of work being put into just keeping the electricity running solid, all that day-to-day stuff. But in addition, we're always looking for new projects and new ways to be better service to our members. And yesterday we had our renewable committee meeting, and so there were some updates on some renewable projects that HEA has going. One thing is we have a proposal to build a hydro project at Grant Lake that we've been working on for many years that's just kind of slowly moving forward. It probably won't be actually physically in service till 2026.
Well, I see it as number one on your strategic initiative, one on your strategic plan. So, how many years has this been in development?
Longer than I've been on the board. I think that's sort of how kind of the benefits and also the problems with, not problems, but hydropower is really long lasting. And once you've got it going, like we have Bradley Lake or our portion of Bradley Lake, it can run pretty much forever and ends up very cheap, but it takes more money and more time to put it in service. And there's other things that can work faster. We actually just heard about a couple of proposals where independent power producers, so independent companies have proposals to come build solar farms in HEA's service territory, including one proposal that's maybe for a really large one of 20 megawatts. And so what that works is if they can figure out a way to produce solar power more cheaply than we can produce gas power, then we'll buy the solar power for them from them instead. So it's kind of a win for everybody.
Thanks. That's Aaron McKittrick, board member. Jim Levine, it sounded to me like you had something you wanted to add to that.
Well, I was just going to mention that Grant Lake is probably a dozen years that we've been working on it. We just got our FERC license last year. And so now it's in the
FERC
design phase.
And what's a FERC license?
It's a Federal Energy Regulatory Commission.
Okay.
And, they have primacy, I guess, over that sort of thing.
And so right now, did you say, Aaron, 2024 that we might see energy out of Grant Lake?
2026 for that. Now, some of the other things, like the solar projects, if they, you know, come up with a plan that everybody's happy with, that could happen much sooner. So it's just different kinds of projects take different amounts of time to build.
And so currently in operation, the Kiske Generation Plant, Bradley Lake Hydroelectric Plant, Bernice Lake Power Plant, and the Soldotna Power Plant. Thanks for the update on Grant Lake. But I know the Renewable Committee, the Renewable Energy Committee, also met yesterday. And so I hear you talking a little bit about it, but I'd like to hear more about this commitment to 50% renewable energy by when, Jim Levine?
Well, by 2025.
And what do you
just
mean?
Just a few years.
What does HEA mean when they say they plan to use 50% renewable energy? Break it down for people. Let them know what that really means.
Well, and I guess in my mind, it's a big energy savings and real cost savings. We have a budget of approximately $100 million, and over $30 million of that is just for fuel. That's the natural gas that it takes to run the generators at Nikiski and Soldotna. You mentioned Bernice Lake, but we hardly ever use that one. And I was going to mention, too, is that the cost, for instance, at Bradley Lake, it's about 5 cents a kilowatt hour. And the cost of our gas systems is about 13 cents a kilowatt hour.
That's a big difference.
A big, savings there. And if we can get to 50% of our power generation, then theoretically we'd be saving $15 million in fuel.
And maybe
and
more.
And the fuel is just a pass-through. We don't really make money on it. We just charge what people charge, you know, the
you're just charging the rate
Hillcorp
for use.
Yeah, what Hillcorp charges us, we just have to pass it on. It's
also, thank you for making that point that it is Hillcorp Energy that we get that, that we get it from. Aaron McKittrick, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, and I think that one, so there's several reasons to have a goal like that. And, you know, Jim mentioned some of the economic reasons. There's also really a risk in the fact that our current energy supply is just so single source. You know, 88% of our energy comes from natural gas, and that natural gas comes from Hillcorp. And Cook Inlet gas is a very small market. There's, you know, not very many suppliers. Last time we had to go out for bids, Hillcorp was the only one that could bid on a long-term utility contract, and there's really only a few buyers. You know, three electric utilities and NSTAR are mostly the customers, and there's no gas coming in or out of the inlet. And so this is, you know, prices have been rising here a lot. Like in the lower 48, natural gas costs have gone down and down till they're just a couple dollars per 1,000 cubic feet, which is usually how you measure it. And here they're 7 or 8 and have been going up in the last couple decades.
Thanks. That's Aaron McKittrick, HEA board member, and Jim Levine, HEA board member. If you have any questions You can call 235-7721 and either just ask, well, either write down your question and send it into the studio, or you can ask it on the air if you like. Or you can email questions to Kathleen@kbbi.org. And I want to get to, in the Renewables Committee meeting yesterday, I want to talk to people about, or ask you to talk to people about, the net metering program and how it benefits HEA and how it benefits the membership. Erin, can you start with that?
Sure. I mean, the net metering program at HEA and similar ones at other utilities have been really popular. There's been a pretty explosive growth in the number of people connected and the amount of power they're producing.
I think that'll help get you to that goal of increasing.
It will. It's still very small on the scale of HEA entirely. So we have.
Can you put it in perspective?
I sure can. So we had last year, I think, 264 people connected net metering, and that's pretty much all solar panels. And they together produced about 0.5% of the power that we use at HEA. And so for those individual households, they can produce most all, you know, of their own power, depending on how big of a system they put up. But it's still pretty small in the scheme of our whole mix. And so we're really, I'm very supportive of people doing that, but we can't really rely on it to meet a larger goal. We need to pursue larger scale things as a utility while enable people to pursue household scale things themselves.
Thanks. And Jim, is there anything you want to add to that before I move on to the next thing on my list?
No.
Okay.
Net metering is really important. I really like it too. But like Erin said, it's a very small percent.
Well, I want to talk go ahead.
I did want to actually add one thing, and that is we have a cap on how much we're allowed to have net metering.
That was my next question.
We have hit that cap pretty much every year now, and we requested that we have the cap go up to 10%, but the RCA only allowed 7%, so we're aiming for that 7% now.
And so pretty much every year, every time the Regulatory Commission of Alaska allows you to expand how much you're taking on for that program, then there are customers or people within the membership that are ready to take those spots. So are you continuing to just try and expand it every year?
Well, we've never actually hit our cap before we requested the additional.
I guess so, I was under the impression that you were meeting your cap pretty regularly.
Well, we would have met the old cap. So we've been trying to be ahead of the game with the Regulatory Commission and applying for those increases before we run into it, because we want to continue to make room for members to be able to sign up and get on net metering. And so we've always had that, because HEA has been really, you know, ahead of most of the other utilities and pushing that cap up through those requests to the RCA.
So I was reading the Kilowatt Courier, I'll have you know, which is, if you don't know, you get it in the mail or you could see it online. Is it still mailed out or is it all only online, Carrie Ann Baker?
You know, I don't even know the answer to that. Okay. I believe that we have it online.
Yes.
I'll get back to you on that.
Okay. I don't think I've ever received one in the mail in a while.
I'm pretty sure that we've stop the mailing part and just it's on.
Okay. Well, there's lots of information in there. And one of the things that I found in the latest issue of the Kilowatt Courier is that there could be a quarterly reduction in rates starting backdated to April 1st for this month, because HEA submitted a filing with RCA, the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, to request a change in the cost of power adjustment. And so Jim, you were explaining this very well just a minute before. COPA, if people want to know what COPA is when we talk about it, it's the cost of the fuel purchased by HEA to generate electricity. And you were just talking about that. It's adjusted on a quarterly basis. So is this just something that the secretary or of the HEA board has to request or submit every quarter?
Yeah, it's just a pass-through. It's whatever our rates, or rather our cost for fuel was the quarter before. We are required to then adjust the rates based on what happened.
Okay, and so the Kilowatt Courier says to expect, some people can expect a small rate decrease in the coming month or in the coming quarter.
Yeah, and this, it reflects both it's the cost of power. And so for HEA, most of that is fuel, but that also includes Bradley Lake. And so the main thing that changes, the cost of fuel changes, but that tends to escalate sort of on a yearly basis from the Hillcorp contract. And so on a quarterly basis, what's changing that number tends to be how much power we're getting from Bradley Lake versus the gas plants and things about, how much the Bradley power costs, because that varies depending on their maintenance and such. And then also what's in the gas contract. And those are things that it's pretty automatic and all the utilities do it. Like, it's just a really simple worksheet. This is all of those costs for the last quarter. And then that goes into the rate for the next quarter. It's not something that we sit around as a board and discuss and vote on. It's just automatic. Now, the base rate, the other, 16 cents or so, that is something that we set ourselves based on our overall budget, and that's something that would be discussed every year in the budgeting process, whether that could stay the same or needs to change.
So I was looking at the 2021 appropriations requests, and I do want to go over, because this is the work that HEA, some of the work that HEA has set for itself in the immediate or in the now. So, but one of them, priority number four, I definitely want to hear about landfill gas to energy. Now, I know, like, when we were talking before the interview, before we went to air, Aaron, you were saying that, tidal energy is interesting and fascinating, but we're not much closer than we were 20 years ago to actually generating energy. So how close are we to being capable of generating energy from landfill gas?
About $12 million away. I mean, it's a small project. This proposal would be a joint effort with the borough in the landfill up in Soldotna, and the plans are pretty well developed, and it could just be built in a pretty simple way. It's a small project, but it would save, it would help them deal with emissions from the landfill as well as producing energy. But it's something that we put in that appropriations request because grant funding would be a big help to get that going. The borough doesn't have money for it, and we don't really either, in that it doesn't necessarily pencil out as economic on its own if we had to do the whole thing. And so that's a kind of thing that would be a great project and would really benefit from something like appropriations, which is why we put it in there.
Thanks. Yeah, go ahead,
Jim. I jump in a little bit on that landfill gas. They're probably going, the borough is going to be required to maintain or put something into not allowing the emissions from the landfill. So they're going to have to do something eventually, and it turns out that creating or generating electricity is a really good way of offsetting some of the costs for them. So that's, and we're just, and we'd be working with them to help that out, and we'd get some electricity out of it.
Cool. Yeah, it just sounded like a really interesting project, but I do want to get into some of the other appropriations requests for Homer Electric. First of all, we talked a little bit about Grant Lake, but I know that there is a Kenai Peninsula wind project. Aaron, you and I talked a little bit about it on the phone last night. And can you and Jim explain to people what that Kenai Peninsula wind project looks like? The appropriations request document says $190 million. Is that right?
Yeah, and I think I would clarify that an appropriations request is a wish list, not a plan. HEA doesn't have any plans to go out and just spend $190 million of our money to do anything at this point because we don't have that. However, is in pursuit of our renewable goals, we're looking at, you know, how can we meet them? And a large wind project would be a really good tool in that toolkit. And so we've been working with consultants to figure out, you know, what and where such a thing might work out in HEA's service territory. And I can't give you actual details of where we are on that, but we're actively pursuing it. And basically, the appropriations request, there's kind of two paths for something like this. You know, if there turns out to be, you know, grant money or other such things that you can get in an appropriations request, then we would love that. And sort of the alternate path that, you know, I was talking about with those solar projects, that's a much more common path if you don't get big grants, is that you end up, if there are resources that are good, you end up working with a private company that does, they build a project and they sell the power to HEA. And so if they can sell wind power or solar power or any sort of other power to us more cheaply than we can make it with gas, then we don't have to spend that $190 million ourselves. But if somebody gave it to us, we would.
Okay. Jim, do you want to add anything to that?
No, that was a pretty good synopsis.
Cool. So I have two questions that have come through calling 235-7721. Start with Doug. Doug asks, how does HEA predict, or does HEA predict the cost of electricity in 10 to 15 years? Will it go up on an average of 4%? So can someone dive into that, or anybody?
Yeah, this is Carrie Ann. I think that, you know, that's a very specialized line, and it takes all sorts of people to look into that. What we should probably do is get one of our engineers in here to speak to you on that, because there's a whole science behind how those predictions get done. And I think the listeners probably deserve to have a real specific and concrete answer to that question.
Although we can maybe tell you some of the factors that are involved. So, you know, of course there's inflation, so everything is going to go up, sticker price for inflation. There is fuel costs, which there is at least some amount those go up just because of the escalation in our contract. And given that Cook Inlet fuel costs have been rising steadily for decades, that probably will go up as well. They've been rising faster than inflation. And then other costs.
Yeah, I'm wondering where Doug got that number of 4%. I'm wondering where that came from.
It could have been from fuel prices, and fuel prices would be, I mean, I think I don't have the graph in front of me, but that would be similar to what we have seen. And so the fuel prices would then be a third of our costs, right? So if those went up 4%, and I'm not saying I'm going to predict natural gas prices, if they did, though, it wouldn't put our whole costs up that, because that would apply to a third of our costs, not the whole thing.
And Doug says solar companies is where he got that 4-5% number. So
I don't know where they got it. I, you know, like Carrie Ann said, you need real modeling to try to predict it, but also people do, if you look at old state plans and assessments and documents, people are not very good at predicting things like that, because doing things like predicting fossil fuel prices is hard. The state of Alaska has to try this a lot and often gets it wrong.
Okay. Thanks, Aaron. Jim, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I was going to mention that this cost of service study, we've been looking into doing that in a couple of years. You do a rate case when you've done major improvements, and so probably in a couple of years we'll end up having to do that anyways, and at that point they do very precisely at least try to predict what the costs are going to be over the next 5, 10, 15 years. And we do a cost of service study about every 10-ish or so years, 5 to 10 years.
Thanks. The next question I have that came to by calling 235-7721 is from Olga, and Olga wants to know why. Why does HEA limit net metering? Aaron, you want to start with that one?
Sure, that's easy. We don't. This is in state law and run through the
Regulatory Commission of Alaska.
Regulatory Commission of Alaska, the 1.5%, that's where the cap started, is just written into that law and those regulations, and you apply to the Regulatory Commission to change that number. So that number did not originate with us. The net metering laws are above our level.
Okay. And it's funny too, is that, I mean, we started at 1.5, we requested 3, quickly hit that limit, requested 10, they only allowed us 7. We'll see what happens there. But what I find interesting is that the actual amount of electricity that's being generated is, like Aaron said, I think less than 1%. So they consider it's 3% or 7%, whatever the RCA limit is, based on if the solar panels were to be operating 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, which of course never happens. It can't happen because it's nighttime. And so really we're only at half of a 1%.
Okay, thanks. That's Jim Levine, HEA board member, and Aaron McKittrick, HEA board members. There, we can still take questions. Call 235-7721, or you can email kathleen@kbbi.org. And in just a few minutes, we're going to switch gears, take a short dance break, and then introduce you to board candidates for District 3. But I want to get to a couple more things on this appropriations request, because I'd love to hear about progress on electric vehicle charger. The electric vehicle charger rebate program, it's priority 3 on your appropriations request. Jim, do you want to start talking a little bit about letting people know about it?
Some of the money is coming from this Volkswagen lawsuit thing that came around.
And what was that?
And I don't know the details.
Just drop that on me like that.
It was a few years ago. There was a settlement. I don't remember what exactly Volkswagen did, but it wasn't good, and they were forced to pay a bunch of money.
Oh, they juggled their emissions figures.
Yes, they did that.
Yeah.
And so that money was then spread out around the country and put to support electric vehicle charging, and so Alaska did get some of that and is working on implementing that. And one of the things that we need to do on the whole electric vehicle end is, again, involves the Regulatory Commission, because the way that electric rates are designed, fast chargers would pay pretty exorbitant rates because of how quickly they draw power, and so that would make them pretty uneconomical. And so the utilities have actually been working together, the Rail Belt utilities anyway, to come up with a better plan for how those rates would work for electric vehicle chargers. And they're about to submit something to the RCA to try to get that changed.
And so this project, the request for appropriation, it's nowhere near the $190 million that we talk about for the Kenai Peninsula Wind Project. This is a $600,000 request, which is much more doable. It says here, the goal is to have 1,000 members switch to this cleaner technology by assisting with the purchase and installation of level 2 charges at their place of business or residential location. So I just want to say that KBBI has, we have an electric, one of our employees has an electric car that just sits on the charger. So maybe someday we'll be able to put one of the proper electric chargers in.
I hope so.
Yeah, there's a lot, it's really becoming a popular, you know, if you don't have to go to the gas station and even at our rates, the electric is cheaper than most of the gas that you have to put into a car.
Right, even at the Alaska rates. There are some more questions coming in. Jim, I have a question here from Chris that says, could Jim comment on the Kenai Winds Power project that was fully researched and supported and funded by a private sponsor years ago and that was then turned down by HEA? There were dollars appropriated through the legislature for a backup battery system that HEA required, but HEA still denied the project. Does this sound familiar to you, Jim?
It was a little before my time, so no, I'm not that familiar with it. I do know that they were working with a wind company, and the wind company stopped. I mean, I don't know what happened there, but it was just ended.
Okay. So the next thing, let's see, I've got one more question before we move on to introducing Louis Flora. Mark asks, the money paid out for net metering is not dollar for dollar. Why is that? And why can't we, the producers, bank the excess electricity we produce in the summer? Go ahead, Aaron.
I can answer that. Yeah. So the why you can't bank excess electricity, the fact that net metering is calculated monthly is, again, part of those state statutes. It's part of the regulatory commission regulations. So that's not something that we control. Now, and so there's two things going on. So given that it's monthly, if you use more, if you produce more power in a given month than you use, you don't, there is no more own use to offset. And so then you get paid at the same rate any power provider would be. That avoided cost, which is pretty similar to the COPA, it's like the cost of fuel. So that's how much a solar farm would get paid. And it's also how much a solar panel on a house gets paid. It's pretty much the wholesale cost of power because it can't roll over to the next month. Now, we also have another charge that is a system delivery charge. And that is completely, that is separate. But a lot of people with net metering systems end up paying this in the summer because if your usage, if you buy less than 150 kilowatt hours of power from HEA, then you get hit with this system delivery charge to make up the difference. And the system delivery charge is a very confusing part of our rate structure. And we've definitely had discussions, as Jim said, when we do the next rate case study and take that to the RCA and redo our rates, that we might come up with a system that is a little bit easier to understand.
Jim, do you want to add anything to that?
No, she's described that correctly. I was on the board back then, and yes, it's kind of the laws and our rate structure, and we just in a few years hopefully we can clean up that system delivery charge.
Okay. Well, thanks so much. Let's take a short break. We're going to shift gears. You're listening to The Coffee Table. The topic is HEA's annual meeting coming up on May 6th and board elections. Guests are Carrie Ann Baker, new HEA spokesperson, also Aaron McKittrick and Jim Levine, HEA board members. And when we come back, we'll talk about the District 3 candidates for HEA board. I'm Kath. We'll still be taking your questions, so you can still call them in to 235-7721 or email them to Kathleen at kbbi.org.